Bing, bong, bing, bong, 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 bing, bong, bong. Okay, here we go. This coming Shabbos, Parshas Kisetze, is the Yahrzeit of Rabbi Yankiv Yisrael of Cherkas. Rabbi Yankiv Yisrael of Cherkas was the third son of Ramatala of Chernobyl. He was the grandfather of Ramat Chadoiv of Harnastaipel. He was Ramatala's mother's father, and he was really responsible for raising Ramatala. Ramatala's mother died when he was very young, and his grandfather virtually adopted him. That's where we got the name Twersky, although Ramatala's father's name was Auerbach, but because he was raised by his mother's father, he adopted his mother's father's last name. Therefore, we are fraudulent Twerskys. Our last name really should be Auerbach. So Rabbi Yankiv Yisrael, the Chakasser, was a son-in-law of Reb Dov Ber, who was the second Rebbe of Lubavitch. His wife was Dvorah Leah. Right, that was the first Yaakov Yisrael and Dvorah Leah. My grandparents were the second Yaakov Yisrael and Dvorah Leah. They both obviously were descendants of that Yaakov Yisrael and Dvorah Leah. So that's that. So the says Yotzei to Shabbos Parshas Kisetze, and I will share with you a mimer of his, which has really just brings together a lot of the things that we've been talking about over the past 30-40 years into just a very beautiful tapestry. If you take a look at the last pasuk on 10:56, pasuk says, "Moitza sifasecha tishmer ve'asisa kasha nadarta l'Hashem alikecha nedava ashadibarta b'ficha." Very wordy pasuk. Pasuk says, "You shall observe and carry out what emerges from your lips, just as you vowed a voluntary gift to Hashem, your God, whatever you spoke with your mouth." It was a very pasuk that really, in English, has really no structure. It doesn't, and it's not much better in Hebrew. There are two types of gifts, halachically speaking, in the times of the Beis Hamikdash. One of them is called a neder, one is called a nedava. A neder is a person who becomes inspired to give a gift to the Almighty. So he says, "I take it upon myself to bring, let's say, a karban oila, karban shlamim," makes a commitment upon himself to bring a karban. He then goes out to his flock, and he notices that in the flock there are some very beautiful animals. So he chooses, let's say, a given lamb or a sheep or whatever it is that you bring that type of karban from. And he will bring that as the commitment or the fulfillment of his vow. That's one type of vow. That type of vow in Lashon Kodesh is a person who says, "Hare Olai, I take it upon myself." Okay? That's the Hebrew language. Hare Olai is I take it upon myself. That's called a neder. That's a person who makes a commitment to bring a karban. There's a second type of commitment, which is a person who says, Hare Zu. He doesn't say, "I take it upon myself." He walks out into his flock. He sees that he has a whole variety of magnificent animals. He becomes very inspired to thank the Rebbeinu Shalom. So he says, "See that sheep? That's a beautiful animal. I want to bring that animal as a gift to Hashem as a karban." So he doesn't make the commitment upon himself. The commitment is given upon a given animal. Okay? That is called a nedava. That's a gift. He's bringing a specific gift. What's the difference between the two? In one instance, he makes the commitment upon himself. In the other instance, the commitment is upon the animal. I'll tell you a halachic difference between the two. Let's say that as he's walking with this animal out in the street, a car comes and runs over the animal.
A car?
A horse and buggy. Come.
A chariot.
And if we're talking about the Beis Hamikdash HaShlishi, a rocket with a person on it comes shooting by and happens to kill the animal. In the case where he made a specific commitment upon a certain animal, where he made a nedava, where he said, Harezu, I'm committing this animal, he's exempt from his obligation. He committed this animal, the animal's no longer alive, he's free from his obligation. But in the case where he took the commitment upon himself, where he said, Hare Olai, I make a commitment that I'm going to bring a carbon. If this animal was gone, so you have an obligation to bring a second animal. Because your obligation was not specific to the animal. Even today, if a person would go and in some given case where he'd commit an item to tzedakah, and that item is taken, so he's free. But if he says, I make a commitment upon myself to give to tzedakah, then if that particular item that he gave gets lost, he needs to give a second item. The problem with these two things, one of them is called a nedava, one of them is called a neder, is that this pasuk goes back and forth here. Take a look at the pasuk. It's meitzis of asechet ishma. You have to keep that which came from your lips. V'yasisan yishud, kasha nadarta l'Hashem alikecha, the neder which you took, which is when a person says, Hare Olai, then the pasuk concludes, nedava shedibarta b'ficha. So the pasuk goes back and forth. These are two completely different terminologies. One of them is where I made a commitment upon myself. The second one was I made a commitment upon the animal. The pasuk uses them interchangeably. Says the Chikasa Zeda, we're not talking at all about these two things, okay? There are two different types. One, this concept where a person says, I take it upon myself, or I commit to this, the language of Hare Olai, which is I take it upon myself, or Harezu, I'm specific, we're dealing here with a whole different cosmic commitment. We're dealing here with a cosmic oath. And that is the oath that our sages tell us that a neshama, before it comes down to this world, there's an oath that the neshama takes, which is Tehi Tzadik Va'al Tehi Rasha. The neshama takes an oath that it's going to be righteous in this world. That's the oath we're talking about. We're not talking about an animal. We're talking about the oath that the neshama takes before it ever comes down to this world. So when the pasuk begins, Meitzis of Asecha Tishmar, you must guard, you must keep that which you spoke, it's talking about an oath that was taken before the neshama ever came down to this world.
Which pasuk are you reading?
I'm reading pasuk 24 on page 1056. It's chapter 23, pasuk 24. You need to keep the commitment that you made. Ve'asisa, and you shall act kasha nodarta. So he goes through this, and the pasuk, this mimer is structured in such a way that is extremely confusing, but I'll try not confusing you with it. And that is as follows. I'll give you the first way, and then we'll take this step after step. Step number one is, there's one thing to be a theoretical tzaddik. Really, all of us are theoretical tzaddikim. If you ask any Jew at any given time, what do you want in life? Where are you going? What are you doing? Shlomo Kalbach has a thing on one of his tapes. If you ask a Jew, stop a Jew in any place and say to him, where are you going? He says, I'm going to Jerusalem. Stop a Jew on the way to his gas chambers and say, on the way to the gas chamber and say to him, where are you going? He'll say, I'm going to Jerusalem. We're all on our way to Jerusalem, right? We're all any Jew is wants to be a tzaddik. That's theoretical. That's Hare Olai. I take it upon myself. We all make commitments. It's Chodesh El. We're heading towards Rosh Hashanah. We're all making commitments to be great people. That's one thing when it's in theory. When it comes to actuality, the pasuk's saying it's not enough to be a theoretical tzaddik. But what happens when it comes to action? What happens when it comes down to Harezu? Now I'm handing you a critical case. Now you have to make an ethical, moral, an ethical or moral choice. Now it becomes a nedava. Now it's Harezu. And up until now, you were talking about self. I was talking about me. Me, I'm a tzaddik. There's no question. When it comes down to practical life, it isn't so simple anymore. Then all of a sudden, you know, now it's reality. Now there's a second step. Now I need to take the theory. Now I need to take my commitment and put it into action. That's Harezu. That's now I'm facing a real life situation. So it goes from the neder, where a person makes a commitment about himself, to a nedava, where it becomes down to an actual reality. And there the pasuk is saying, there's two steps here. I want you to understand. It's very nice that you're making a commitment, but you got to follow through. There has to be follow through, bringing it into actuality. It's a very fascinating. I think we've talked about this in the past. The Piasetz Nereba in Derech HaMelech talks about the fascinating protection mechanism that the Almighty put into each one of us. He says that every one of us, despite the fact that we may err and go off as many times as we do, we separate us from our Averis. It's a tremendous gift. We could have blundered as many times as we have, but that's not how we see ourselves. We just see ourselves, I'm still okay. It's a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because really, if we ever saw ourselves as we really are, it would be all over. So the Rebbeinu Shlomo allowed for this dichotomy to take place. I'm okay. You know, the fact that I lost my temper 3,000 times in the past 24 hours, that's not the real me. It just happened to be when I lost my temper. The fact that I did A, B, and C, that's not really me. That was just, you know, temporary insanity. He says we have to be able to apply that same mindset to how we look at other people. It's very funny that somebody else crosses us once and we write him off. Then all of a sudden it becomes the essence of the person. So-and-so is a fill in the blanks. Then we completely write them off. Sure. Right? It's very different all of a sudden. When it comes to us, we have room. There's justification for error. There's separate people. There's me and there's my actions. But when it comes to somebody else, you know what I saw somebody else do? They were, you know, forget it. I don't want anything to do with them. What about the fact that we've done the same and worse many times? I'm different because it's me, and then you know, it's all to me. So he says, if he sets it up, he says that in the world to come, Hashem uses our judgment of others as the judgment against us. The same way he says, you know what the barometer of justice that HaKadosh Baruch Hu uses against us is? Exactly how we judged other people. If we're favorable in judgment, and we're able to find justification for others, and the Rebbeinu Shlomo finds justification. That's a good thing to have in mind. Comes Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, Day of Judgment. Remember that the way we judge others is the way we get judged. So comes the Chakasit and says, there's two steps. One step is the commitment we make. The next step is you got to follow through. There's Harei Olai. Then there's coming down to practical Harei Zur. Now let's see how we apply the theory in real life. All right, now go back to the earlier source, which is on page 982. What did you say, 987? That's not bad. Take a look, chapter 8, Devarim 8. Pasuk 3. In order to let you know, it is not by bread alone that man lives, rather man lives by that which emanates from God's mouth. And this is a gewalt. This is really... He takes this on two levels. He says that each of us is comprised of a dual being. We have a neshama kedusha, we have a godly soul, a nefesh aliki, and that godly soul has one interest, and that interest is to connect with HaKadosh Baruch. We've talked about this many times, right? The godly soul has a single interest, and that single interest is to connect HaKadosh Baruch. We then have that which he calls a nefesh ha-bahami, which is an animal soul. And the interest of the animal soul is to indulge in physical pleasure. And we're made up of these two drives. Now, the distinction between the animal soul and the godly soul is very fundamental. And that is that you can get the animal soul to join the mission of the godly soul, but you can't get the godly soul to join the mission of the animal soul. Transformation is only possible in one way, in one direction. You can harness the energy of the animal soul to join the godly soul, but you'll never harness the godly soul to join the animal soul. That doesn't work that way. Now,
if you don't harness the animal soul to support the godly soul, does the godly soul wither?
It withers almost to the point where it can't be heard. But it never really completely disappears. It's always there gnawing in the back of your mind, making your life miserable. Thus, the happiness of most Jews.
Does the animal soul have a choice?
Does it have choice? It has only one mission. It doesn't really have choice. You have the choice. You can control it. It's very much like a car. Aside from Herbie, cars don't have choices. Right? You drive the car. We have the ability to direct it. So he says as follows. That we have these two themes of Hare Olai and Hare Zu. There is a process which takes place, which is the answer to the question of who am I? That's question number one. Before we begin anything else, we need to ask the question, am I my godly soul? Or am I my physical soul? Shared with the guys is this fascinating thing. I'm sure none of the women have the same issue, but for the guys, when you get up in the morning, so there's two voices. One voice says, I want to go back to sleep. The second voice says, you should really get up and go learn. One of them speaks in an I. The other one says, you. I want to go back to sleep. You should really go to shul. Right? Who's the I and who's the you? Very interesting that Hillel, the Gemara tells us, when Hillel was going to go to the bathhouse, and they asked him where he was going, he said, I'm going to treat my host. He defined himself by his godly soul. His body was the host. Right? Very different than how we view ourselves. Question number one is, Hare Olai, who am I? Now, the truth is that when the Pasuk speaks about the Neshama, what does the Pasuk say? How did we get a soul? It says, Vayipach ba'ap of Nishmas Chaim, Hashem breathed the soul into man. Says the Pasuk, L'man ha'diyachad, what is this all about? Ki lo yalalachem levad yichya adam. Do not define yourself by your physicality, by the bread alone. Rather, ki al kol moitzi pi Hashem yichya adam. I want you to define yourself by that which came from God's mouth. Namely, define yourself by your soul, not by your body. That's Hare Olai. Who am I? Who am I is ki lo yalalechem levad yichya adam. The goal of Torah is to move the person from the point where they define themselves solely and exclusively by their body, to the point where they begin to define themselves by their soul as well. And hopefully someday, exclusively by one soul. That's Hare Olai. That's the neder. Tehi Tzadik Al Tirosh. Step number two is very, very different, because step number two is not how do I see myself, but what do I see when I look out at the world around me? Do I see everything only in its physical manifestation, or do I see the world as an extension of godliness? do I recognize, as the Arizal teaches, that every physical object is only sustained and moment by moment created by the word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as we've spoken about so many times, that the 10 utterances of creation isn't something that took place 5,765 years ago. Rather, the 10 utterances of creation are spoken moment by moment, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates the world moment by moment, and is sustained by godliness. Which means as follows, it's entirely possible for a person to say, I am a godly being. I recognize I have a neshama. But what should I do? I'm in a world of physicality. I'm in a world completely surrounded only by physical things. That's a person who has unbelievably shallow vision. If a person had a deeper understanding of the world around them, then they wouldn't see the world only in its physical manifestation. They would see the world as being an expression of, an extension of Hashem. So he says that's the second meaning of the pasuk. Don't look at the bread itself as if it were only physical. Don't look at the at bread itself as if it is only physical. Look at bread and see that it too is sustained by the godliness. And the truth is that oftentimes when we learn this Raxi calls the woo-woo stuff about the deeper levels of creation, people say to me, why don't you get a life? Why is this relevant? Go learn some halacha. Go learn some musar. What are you busy with this spiritual stuff for? And the answer is in this. This is the answer. The answer is that if people don't delve into any depth into the essence of creation, going into the depth of the Dalai Lamas, the four worlds, and the fact that there's these sparks and all this kind of stuff, then ultimately, despite the fact that they're going to define themselves as being a neshama, they're going to find themselves living in a crass, lowly world. Whereas if a person works and labors to integrate into himself a deeper vision, a deeper understanding of the world, then when they look out at the world, they're going to see something deeper as well. That's why we're doing it. That's what the Chikasa Zayda is saying. That's the world of Harei Zu. There's one world of Harei Alai. Who am I? The world of who am I is, do I define myself as an animal, or do I find myself as a person who's the bearer of a soul? There's a whole other question of Harei Zu. What is it that's surrounding you? What's the world around me? What am I looking at? What am I touching? What am I feeling? Is it something exalted and godly, or is it just crass physicality? Yep.
Are you basically saying then that some of the things that appear crass and worldly do have a spiritual essence?
Clearly.
So that even those things that perhaps we look at as animalistic, per se, may not be what they seem to be.
Right, so you have to make a distinction, though, between right and wrong. Meaning somebody could walk over to a big pot of a honey-roasted ham and say, boy, this is very godly. I need to do something about this, right? That doesn't work. There, the elevation of it is in avoiding it. But clearly, anything else which is in the realm of the permissible, that's where he says a very strong language here.
That's the key, Rabbi.
What? Let me just get that language. It's a very powerful language. I don't know, somewhere here he says that is the ikar avodah, that's the main challenge is in how we view the world around us in the realm of the permissible. So,
I think the confusion becomes when people cross the line and start finding kedusha in all kinds of
in the Kabbalah drinks.
Yeah.
in a or whatever. Right.
Here's
there's too much danger in narrowing the realm of the permissible.
Okay, that's a big controversial issue. Is where do you start? Is it possible for a person to embrace all of the physical world and walk right into this process of elevation, or are they living in a world of deception? I'm not getting into that now. Chicken. Okay. There's a very, very fascinating Zohar Kaddish. Zohar Kaddish says two things. He says, Shas Tzloisa, Shas Krova, and Shas Achila, Shas Krova. The Zohar Kaddish says there are two times of war. One of them is in davening, and the second is in eating. So most people in New York understand very well what it means that during davening is a time of war. Come into any shul in New York, you have a very clear understanding. There's fighting about the aliyahs, and there's fighting about the almud, and there's all kinds of... you don't appreciate this. You've never been in the shtiblach in New York. Most shtiblach in New York are war zones. But that's not the war that the Zohar Kaddish is talking about. The war he's talking about, the two wars, there's one war at the table, he says, and there's one war in shul. Says a fascinating thing. Wouldn't you imagine? I can hear that when it comes to sitting down to the table, you understand that there's a war going on. The Nefesh HaBahami wants to indulge in the food. The godly soul says there's something higher going on here. You can understand that there's a war going on. But when you get up to daven, there's no physical aspect of davening. Why is it that when we get up to daven, that all of a sudden, everything we need to do on the entire week's agenda is covered when we get up to daven? All of a sudden, we remember everything we forgot to do, we remember everything we need to do, and most of it, or certainly a good portion of it, is not necessarily related to matters of the soul. They claim that one of the tzaddikim once went over to somebody who just stepped out from Shemoneh Esrei and gave him Shalom Aleichem. So he said, Rebbe, I've been here all along. He says, it's not true. You were just in the marketplace and you had gone on several trips and you took care of all your vacation arrangements. You weren't here at all. He says that these two times involve these two definitions. Davening is the time of self-definition. That's the war of Harei Alai. Who am I? And therefore, there's a tremendous struggle because the body doesn't want to allow you to redefine yourself by yourself. The body wants to hold you back. The neshama, on the other hand, wants to define itself at that moment as being the neshama. So there's a war. When it comes to the table, that's the second war. That's the war of harezu. That's the war of how do I view the world around me. So Chazal established brachas. Chazal understood that the laws of kashrus help a person. What's the whole essence, the perspective of keeping a kosher kitchen? I'm not an animal. I have two separate sides because God is here in the kitchen with me. There's a milchiga side, there's a fleshiga side, there's mitzvahs of challah, there's mitzvahs of other hafroshes in the time of the Beis Hamikdash. You have to take off trumas, you have to take off maizos, you have to leave over peah. All of a sudden, the agriculture of the Jew is completely different than the agriculture of the nations. And the kitchen of the Jew is a whole different kitchen. It's not the same place. Achila is not the same achila. It gives a person a different perspective. Of course, everything can become second nature. That's our worst, it's mitzvah sanashim ulamada. We get used to things and we no longer think about the fact that you can't take the milchig spoon and put it in the flesh of gepata. You can't take the gift of the consciousness of the Jew. It becomes taken for granted and we lose that gift. So these are those, you have these two different times. You have the Mochama of Harezu, and you have the Mochama of Harei Alai. Go back to the first Pasuk in this coming week's Parsha. Pasuk says, Kiseitze lamulchama aleivecha. When you go out to war against your enemy, unesane Hashem aleikecha biyadecha v'shevisa shivya, and Hashem will give him into your hand, and you will take him a captive. Page 1046. First pasuk. So there's a very strange phenomenon. The pasuk begins with, you'll go out to war against your enemies, plural. Unesanoi Hashem aleikecha biyadecha, and Hashem will give him into your hands. It should say, Unesanam Hashem aleikecha. Hashem will give them, Hashem will deliver them into your hands. It says them in the English? No, it doesn't. It says Hashem will deliver him into your hand. Huh?
It says them.
It says them.
They changed it?
Mine says
him. What version? Which one is the newer one? Which one is the older one? Mine is the 9th edition. August 8, 1998.
Yours is the newer. Mine says 93.
They changed it back. They corrected it. It should say him. Cross it out. No, don't leave it on. Should say him. Hashem will deliver him into your hands. Says the Chikasadeh, the beautiful thing. When you go out, he says, it's talking about the neshama leaving its safe haven in Shemayim. Kiseitze, I want you to know, when you go out, the moment you leave upstairs, you should understand what's going on. L'melchom alevecha. You're at war. Kiseitze, the minute you leave the abode of the neshama above, it's la milchama levecha. You should know you're at war. And you're at war with two enemies. The Yetzirah expresses itself. One fashion is, who am I? And the second enemy is, what's around you? Two different approaches to distract a person from their mission. Hashem will deliver him into your hands, meaning you have to take these two things on individually. One of them is the definition of self, and the other is the definition of the world around you. If you're able to do that, you will be able to extract, to take captive the physical world to be an ally for your spiritual work. As we said earlier, because the neshama will not partner with the body, but the body will partner with the neshama. In the conclusion of this week's parasha, you have the war with Amalek, which he says Amalek's mission was to create separation in the world. His mission was to corrupt the angle of the world around you. That was the eradication of Amalek, is because their mission was to separate the world from godliness. You see that tzaddikim, many tzaddikim, had the ability to harness the physical world in many ways to their service, to the degree where I was just listening to a tape of a fellow who went back with a group of people to Europe, and they were in Lizhensk, and one of the people shared the story that he had heard from a group of people who, when the Nazis came into Lizhensk, went and hid in the oil in the little building over the grave of the Remelech of Lizhensk. That's where they were hiding when the Nazis came. So the Nazis came to the cemetery, and the non-Jewish population knew that thousands of people used to come on a regular basis to this caver. So they told the Nazis that concealed in the grave are all kinds of jewels and things. That this is one of the places that the Jews hid their money. So the Nazis came in. I don't remember what the order of things were, but they ordered the Jews to dig up the grave, and they absolutely refused. So they called in the Poles, and they had enough reverence that they refused as well. So the Nazis themselves dug up the grave, and they made the Jews stand there and watch. And they came, and the Poles had told them that he had been buried for almost close to 200 years. They came upon the casket, they opened the casket, and these Jews repeated, they were there. They opened it up, and he was laying there as if they had just finished the Tahara. He had been buried for some 200 years. The Nazis were so frightened, they ran for their lives, and these Jews ended up escaping and surviving the war due to that fright. It's possible that for the tzaddik who looks at the world in that way, that he transforms his own physical being to such a point where it itself becomes a tool, and it becomes godliness itself. He interprets these two zechiras, the zechira of Miriam, where the Torah tells us to remember that which happened to Miriam, and the zechira of remembering the story with Amalek, again as being these two components. The zechira of Miriam, of watching one's speech is the spiritual component of a person. If you think about it, speech is, by nature, it's intangible. It's the spiritual component. That's a person who recognizes who they are. That's where the process has to begin. And the process concludes by looking around the world and recognizing what the world around us is. That's the zechira of Amalek. So these two things are the critical components for a person to be able to overcome and to win this war, kiseitz el amalchama, and to be able to come home in peace by starting out by recognizing who they are, and by concluding by recognizing that not only is the person made up of a neshama, but in fact the world around us is an extension of HaKadosh Baruch Hu as well. That's it, folks.